Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of Black Girls Have Anxiety 2, the safe space created for Black women, by Black women, to strip away the taboo of talking about mental health. You'll hear from mental health professionals and advocates, as well as Black women sharing their experiences as we break down the complexities, explore ways to heal, and support each other. My name is Ashley, I'm your host. Whether you're a seasoned regular or this is your first time tuning in, thank you so much for your support. Now let's get into today's episode. Welcome back to another episode of Black Girls Have Anxiety 2. I'm your host, Ashley. Welcome back, y'all. Shout out to everybody that is that shows up every time I drop an episode. I appreciate y'all. And if you're new, welcome to the podcast. We have a very special guest. She's on the West Coast, you know, the best coast. Latoya Deshawn, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Ashley. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm ready to go and have some good conversation.
I love it. Yes. I love when somebody shows up and they're just ready with energy. I love it. Yes. I feed off of it.
Yes.
So I'm going to just give y'all a little bit of information about Latoya. Let's just a little background. She's doing lots of things, and I'm going to try to get through all of them, but we are going to definitely cover... you've got like such a diverse background. I love it. So she is founder and chief personal development strategist with a master in education in international higher education. She's got over 25 years of catering to celebrities and high profile talent in the beauty and entertainment industry. She has more than 30 years experience navigating toxic family relationships and chronic pain. She's also an expert in identifying people pleasing behaviors and developing the skills necessary to overcome them. So she's got a deep passion for helping women overcome low self-esteem, emotional loneliness. She gives out keynote addresses to universities and businesses globally. She is a powerhouse. She's got an online life and career coaching program called Resilience and Rediscovery, where she challenges women to break free from the limiting beliefs that are holding them back personally and professionally. She hosts an annual event called Redefine Her, Designing the Future, which is an interactive women empowerment event in, I'm probably going to pronounce this incorrectly, Gaborone. I'm going to let you own that one. I don't know if I can say that today. Botswana. And she's on a mission to become a global leader in her work in helping women revolutionize their relationship with themselves. So, yes, welcome. I love this.
Thank you.
That was a great bio. Let me just say that. I don't know if you wrote that or somebody else wrote that. That was a great bio.
Thank you. I wrote it.
Oh, okay. You want to write mine? Because mine is terrible.
It'll take me about a year.
I love that you are just like kind of straddling two different industries, and you also have some experience living overseas and hosting events overseas, traveling overseas, which I think is just like an underrated way to just like improve your overall life. But before we jump into the deep end, I want to, we're going to jump into Fast and Curious. So Fast and Curious, for anybody that's new, yes. This is our, you know, I'm just going to ask Latoya a bunch of random questions, and she's going to give us the quickest answer, or if you got a story behind it, I will gladly take a story as well.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
All right. Let's do it. What was your favorite TV show growing up?
I don't know. My favorite TV show growing up? I mean, like Beverly Hills 90210. Like,
oh, okay.
I was there every Wednesday.
Okay. You remember the day. Okay.
Yes.
Who was your favorite character?
Brian Austin Green, with his fine self. Yes.
I don't know who that is.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. I can't. Yeah, Brian Austin Gray. Okay. Dylan, we love Dylan. Everybody. They all had their little drug problems. They all had a season where they was going crazy in Beverly Hills. That was my show.
I love it. What is a random fact that you know that you like share with people?
A random fact that I know?
It's like a random fact, yeah.
I don't even know.
It could be about an animal. It could be about like makeup.
A random fact, you know what? I don't know off the top of my head, but I'll have to think about it. I'll come back to it.
Okay, we'll come back to that one. Are you a morning person or a night owl?
Morning person.
Ooh. What are you, a road trip person, or do you want to get on a flight?
I want to get on a flight.
Okay. If you could write a book about yourself, what would you name that book?
I've actually been writing down some titles. So my latest one that I wrote down is Everybody Hates Their Mom? Question mark.
Oh, that's going to be a big seller. Are you ready for that? Because that, girl, that's going to fly right off the show.
We shall see.
That's a good title. I haven't heard that. It's very provocative.
Yeah, nobody better take it. I said it first.
Yeah, we got it here. LaToya Deshawn said it first, so don't steal it. Okay, if you could be any season, what would you be? Fall, winter, spring, summer?
Summer.
Summer? Summer, yes. In L.A.?
No, summer in Africa, summer anywhere but America. But summertime, okay. No, actually summertime shy. Summertime Chicago is absolutely the best. They're hands down the best place in the summer around the world.
Okay. Where did you grow up?
Chicago.
Oh, okay. That's okay. Got you. What is your favorite meal to cook?
Oh my God. That's a twofold question. It's like, what is my favorite? And then what do people like me to cook? People love for me to cook red beans and rice. It's like, I can't get away from like making that. For me, like, I'm a simple gal. Just give me some good crunchy fried chicken.
Oh, yes. Can I get both of those?
You're right.
Really great.
Exactly.
Really great right now. If you could choose to live anywhere in the world for a year, where would you go?
Come on now. That question so tough as a person who is already traveling around the world. I mean, anywhere in Africa, probably. I wouldn't mind doing South Africa or Kenya year round. Also, I really want to get up to Portugal and Amsterdam, but Italy was a vibe. So I think Italy is a vibe. And so
I've heard there's a lot of black folks in Italy.
What kind of black folks? Because the ones in Senegal, the ones from Senegal just rob you. So I don't know like how.
Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah, so I don't know.
That was London that I was thinking about. Maybe that wasn't Italy. I don't know.
Yeah, London does have a lot of black people, but they have a culture similar to ours and like hustle culture. So I don't really want to be there that long.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
What is your favorite country that you visited so far?
Hands down, the first country I went to, China. Still is China.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. The incredible.
What did you like about China?
Man, the rich history, the 800-year history, which means they have a deep respect for how hard they work. You know, the fact that they go home to their families and the families stay up to make sure they have dinner with the man. He sleeps for just a second and then he goes back and works hard. So I just saw all of that wrapped in a bow. And I was just like, yeah, this is what family looks like to me.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never been to China. My husband played basketball there for a hot minute. But it's on the list. There's things there that I would like to see. So whenever I book that trip, I will ask you where to go.
Just know, how about we could just figure out when to go, because I want to get back so bad. I want to get back.
Mm-hmm. I'm down. If you could go to your favorite restaurant and sit down with, you know, you're about to have your favorite meal. There's five seats at the table. Your favorite music is playing. Who do you want to invite to dinner? And it could be any person, dead or alive. It could also be a fictional character as well.
I'm a music girl, so like I just need all my favorites there. So I need like Lil Wayne. I need him there. I need Lil Scrappy, the legend Lil Scrappy. Ooh, okay. Yeah. My favorite artist right now, Musa Keys. South African artist. Yeah, he's a South African artist, Musa Keys. I would probably, who else would I want to put in the room? I would probably, if I could have someone who's not alive, Wayne Dyer. Wayne Dyer. Mm-hmm. He's pretty, he's really helped me out a lot. And who else would I say? Probably somebody who's helped me in the past. Like, I would just probably want to include them. I can't put my finger on it, but probably, you know, my math teacher, my geometry teacher. Okay. You know, I used to go to sleep in that man's class, and he told me I was better than taking naps. And so I would have him there to say, look what I've done.
Oh, that's awesome. Those teachers like that are so important, because, like, it sticks with you. Like, whatever they say in that moment, especially if it's really positive, it sticks with you, and you always, like, kind of go back to it. So
absolutely.
That's a really great table. Okay, one more question. I know I'm supposed to be done right now, but my last question is, how many countries have you visited?
I don't know. I would probably say somewhere between 8 to 11. I just haven't counted recently. And before, that would be a humble brag, and it still is, but people are really traveling now and really going to a lot of countries. So I have a lot of catching up to do, but somewhere around 8 to 11.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on perspective, because to you, you might have catching up to do. There are some people that have not left their city. So 8 to 11 is a lot.
Yeah.
Depending on how you look at it. That's awesome. You know, I'm a big proponent of getting out of your space and traveling and, like, going and adventure and discovering other cultures and, like, immersing yourself in it. So I love that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for playing Fast and Curious with me.
That was a good game.
Thank you. I love all your answers too.
Nice.
That was awesome. We're going to hop into our mind games segment. So mind games is where I give y'all a little mental health trivia. Today we're going to be talking about attachment disorders. So you guys are going to, I'm going to tell you a little bit about attachment disorders, and then I'm going to give you a description of one, and y'all have to guess. LaToya, you can guess too if you want. But for everybody that's listening, if you've been around listening for a while, you know, I usually come back to the mind games answer at the end. Well, y'all know I'm switching things up this summer, so I'm just going to give it to you all at one time. Okay? We're going to try it out, see how it works. If you hate it, tell me. If you love it, also tell me. All right. So for those of you that haven't listened to our episode on attachment disorders are, they basically describe conditions that cause children to have a difficulty with emotional attachment to others. So it could include a lack of emotional responses or overly emotional attachments. These types of conditions can cause you to have a hard time connecting and forming meaningful relationships with others as you grow older. While the causes of attachment disorders may vary, some experts believe it could be due to inadequate caregiving. Some examples could be physical or emotional abuse or neglect or traumatic loss. So I'm going to give you the description of a particular attachment style, and I will give you some options to guess what they are at the end. So in this particular type of attachment style, you may have conflicting feelings about relationships and intimacy. You may want to develop romantic relationships, but worry that your partner will hurt you, leave you, or both. You push aside your feelings and emotions, try to avoid experiencing them. You also fear you're not good enough for the kind of relationship that you would like to have. And although you might be able to suppress your emotions for a period of time, they may tend to come out in bursts or emotional outbursts. It can feel overwhelming and create a pattern of highs and lows with your relationships with others. So here are your options. Is it A, anxious, preoccupied attachment disorder? Is it B, dismissive, avoidant attachment disorder? Or C, fearful, avoidant attachment disorder? I can speak today, promise. All right, I'll give y'all a couple more seconds. While y'all think about it, I'm going to give you just a little reminder that if you're not following Black Girls Have Anxiety 2 on Instagram, not Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and most recently Threads. Make sure you're following us on there. You got to type the whole thing in, Black Girls Have Anxiety Too. And then you can keep up with the social media side of Black Girls Have Anxiety Too. All right. Now, again, your options for the answer are A, anxious preoccupied attachment disorder, B, dismissive avoidant attachment disorder, or C, fearful avoidant attachment disorder. LaToya, you want to take a guess?
First of all, Ashley, you ain't got to talk about me behind my back, okay?
Oh. My bad, coming in hot.
You ain't got to talk about me behind my back. I just like, okay, I get it. I'm going to just say it's anxious attachment, as I struggle with that. And so I know that those are some of the ways in which I have reacted and still try to manage. So I know that I feel like it could be a couple, but for me, it most resonated with anxious attachment.
That's interesting that you say that, because there definitely is crossover with this one between anxious preoccupied attachment disorder and the answer, which is fearful avoidant attachment.
Yeah.
So there is some crossover. I also have a little bit of anxious. I kind of identify more with the anxious preoccupied attachment disorder. Mm-hmm. But I find the fearful avoidant attachment disorder very interesting, because it almost creates a cycle of like the fears and the ways that you try to almost like avoid the feelings create this like endless cycle of, like I said, highs and lows. We're like, okay, now I'm ready to express myself, and now I'm ready to ask for what I need. And then it comes, and then you kind of go like back into the cave of fear.
Yeah, I think when you said that sometimes you'll try to hold it back, but then you'll have an outburst, that's what made me go more towards anxious. Because oftentimes when that occurs, you just can't hold it in anymore. And it's just all a mess. And so that's what made me get that as well. But also, you're fearful to get close so that you, because you think you will go into that state every yeah. time. Yeah, absolutely.
Oof, yes. Relationships are interesting. And yeah, as you guys know, I'm going to throw the link in the description if you guys want to read up a little bit more about attachment disorders. Also, if you scroll back a little bit, there is an episode on attachment disorder. So make sure y'all check that out. We are going to get into the nitty gritty of like, why LaToya is here. I have so many questions for you. But I know that when I read your bio, you're doing work with women around people pleasing. And as somebody that is a lifetime people pleaser, a recovering people pleaser, I know that was one of the first things that, you know, when you reached out, like when we connected, I was like, okay, this is me. I think I actually took the test that you have on your website, like the people pleasing test. And I was like, okay, yep. I guess this is me. This is just further confirmation that I'm a people pleaser.
Congratulations, you're a woman.
Yes. A woman here in America, just people pleasing my way through life. But can you describe for somebody that's like, I don't know what the hell she's talking about, can you describe what people pleasing is and how that kind of shows up in society?
In a nutshell, the way I describe it is just serving others before yourself. So not really attending to your needs and abandoning your needs to be seen to other people. So that's external validation, especially with social media running rampant right now. There's a huge need to people please and to serve others before yourself. And so that in doing that, you don't develop a good sense of self. You don't really know who you are. You basically you just figure out who you need to be in the space of where, who and what you're trying to please.
Ooh, I want to dig into, because you are in LA.
Yes.
And you've had like this career of being in the industry. By the way, y'all, her makeup is flawless right now. Like on point. So, but she's been in the makeup industry in LA for a while. I know you said that you're retired, but I want to talk about like being in LA. LA to me is like top-notch people pleasing, because you're just like trying to get in anywhere. So how did you navigate people pleasing, I guess, in your past versus how you do now in LA, in that type of industry?
Pretty much, I had to just full stop is really how I got out of it. It's just to fully stop. For me, there was no like trying to manage it or compromise myself anymore. I also had achieved my goals in that area, so I didn't have to continue to do it in the same way. But yeah, I built a business that's luxury, completely at your service. You know, I'm the makeup artist that if I can't make it, I have assistants for you. You know, I'm showing up an hour and a half before. I have never in my 17 years gotten anyone out the door late. It's something that I just really pride myself on. And so I really worked hard to create like such a stellar and luxury service. And that really helped to get into the kind of clients, the high profile clients that look for that kind of work. It's just that what I noticed and what really came to me during COVID is that you'll be serving everyone, right? And being served the least. And when it was all time for us to go home and go in the house, and you know, and this was like people I saw every day for the last 3 years. It's like no phone calls, no text messages checking up on me to see how I'm doing. And you know, again, we leave our lives and sacrifice a lot to go into entertainment to make it big. And oftentimes it's incredibly lonely. And even though I have suffered from loneliness all my life, what a way to feel lonely in COVID. When the people you've been working with for 3 years, you don't hear from for months. So that was like a wake up call for me to just say, is this really what I want to do for the rest of my life?
Wow. That's a heavy pill to swallow. I feel like COVID 2020 was already like a mess. 2020 was a lot. But I think to not have the support system that you, I guess, kind of assumed that would be there is really tough. So at this point, now it's 2023. How has your support system changed since then, or has it changed since then?
Well, now as I work gigs, I'm there for the love of the work still when I do take on gigs. And even though I still provide a quality service, I'm not I don't have expectations out of my clients anymore. It's like, you go do your thing, I go do mine, I make sure I get paid what I want, and I have my own established community now that I can really reach out to to get what I need. And if I do have clients or within their teams, I begin to get cool with the people there, it's just a bonus, and I'm grateful for that, but I don't expect it anymore.
So just changing and shifting your expectations when it comes to the interactions that you're having with people.
Yeah, that was part of the reason of how I got to where I was at, because it was just so much about I wanted to be seen a certain kind of way, and subconsciously we want that back. But that's I realized that's a trauma response, and I needed to move outside of my trauma and just start the healing process.
I want to talk about go back a little bit to LaToya. Let's go to like 20-year-old LaToya. How was your mental health at that point? Like, what did you think about mental health at that point? Was it a priority for you? Was it even like part of the conversation?
So I was in college, University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, Big Ten. And I had always had toxic relationships in my family, especially with my mom, my dad, and just knew something wasn't right, right? Didn't have the language to really describe what was going on and all those things. But I remember my senior year, so it had to be around 20 going into 21. It was the first time I walked into a counseling office and said I need a therapist. And so, and this is what I said. This is actually still my issue today. I said, I'm just having problems with men, with my family. Well, I said with members of the opposite sex, with friends, and with my family. I need some help. And so this was around 20, and then they put me in a group coaching experience, which I hated. But
really? Can I ask you what you hated about it?
So here's the thing. I needed my time. I don't want to sit here and listen to your story, the other people's stories. I mean, that's my whole life of having to set the stage to listen to everyone else. And then when I didn't resonate with your story, or at that point didn't I know how to validate people, you know, I sort of was kind of picked on. Like, well, Toya, well, you're not saying anything. I don't have anything to say. You know, and so it was just annoying. And so when we ended the however many weeks we did the group coaching, I remember the one thing that happened that was beneficial. I said, you know, my family, they think that I'm needy. So my family, my friends, they say I'm needy. You're needy. And then I remember the therapist saying, well, are your needs getting met? And I said, no. Ooh. Yeah. So are your needs getting met? I said, no. She said, well, you can't be needy if your needs aren't even being met. And I was just like, wow. And that, and then she said, I need to do more therapy, which I agreed. Yes. So I recommend more therapy. But that would be what I would do, I think, for at least 12 years after that. I didn't do any type of therapy, but I held on to her saying that if my needs aren't even being met, I can't be needy. So that was the only good thing that came out of there.
Mm. At this point in your life, do you feel like your needs are being met?
I mean, it's an inside job, right? It's a personal job. So am I meeting my own needs, right? Do I know what my needs are, and am I able to meet those core needs? Yes. Do I still have relationships where people aren't necessarily willing to meet me there? Yes. And I'm making those decisions daily about how close those people need to be in my life, or if they need to be in my life at all. But I no longer subscribe to I'm needy. I deserve to have my needs met.
Ooh, okay. Title of the episode. All right. No, I love that, because I think it's easy, especially as a people pleaser, like it's really easy to put everybody's needs before you. And I know for myself, a lot of my people pleasing and lack of sharing my needs comes from me almost like minimizing what my needs are. And yeah. I think for a long time for me, they look like, well, you know, my life isn't that hard, or like this situation that I'm going through isn't that, you know, it's yeah. not traumatic. It doesn't require that much attention. I still battle with that today of like, okay, am I going to share with my friend? I know they're going through this. This yeah. seems quite small. So I just like minimize my own needs. Mm-hmm. When in comparison to everybody else's, but yeah, it leaves situations where your needs are not met by yourself, and nobody even knows about your needs, because if you're people pleaser, you probably haven't shared them.
Yeah, I mean, and that, you know, that comes from even younger, when you have parents who've just neglected you and sort of rejected you, and so because these are still your caretakers and you want to please them because this is the only place you know, you're young, you know, you kind of just shrink to be able to fit in the space. And then the other part of it is that you go into high achievement, where you do everything you can to be seen, valued, and heard. So it starts even earlier than that. But again, in doing that, recognizing how my body and my physical health was impacted, again, not having language around it, but just knowing that I was getting so uncomfortable that I needed to seek some sort of help.
Mm. Shift gears a little bit. I want to talk about your first trip overseas. And I think you mentioned it was to China. Mm-hmm. What did you do on that trip? And like, when you came back to the States, how did your view shift? Because I feel like, as somebody who's traveled a lot, I feel like the first time I went and lived overseas changed my whole perspective, like on life. Yeah. When I came back here. So how did that look for you?
Yeah. So going to China, I took a program in college, and I went to community college for 2 years and maxed out the credits there. And I get to college, the university, and they're like, you got to take a history class, but it's like 1,000 people in there. I'm like, I'm not doing it. I literally go in my advisor's office, like, you got to find me an option. Okay. I can't go to community college. I'm not sitting in this classroom. Figure it out. She hands me this application, learning about China program, and I fill it out. And it was completely sponsored by the school. The first question in my interview was, do you like Chinese food? And even though you would think that's not a good question, that's actually an excellent question.
That's a side eye.
I mean, but do you know how many people is going to probably accept the trip and not even like the food? Like, that's huge if you go over there for that long. And so that's when I realized Chinese people are hilarious. Okay. And so they are.
I guess they wrote the pamphlet and were like, do y'all like the food? food, don't come here.
Exactly.
Don't come here if you're going to bash the food.
Exactly, at the very least. And so just having that experience, you know, I come from black parents. They're in their 70s, so they're baby boomers. So unless it was like military or something like that, kids weren't really going overseas. And so because it was a program that was paid for, my parents really couldn't control me in that way. So that was awesome that I took advantage of that trip. And so went there and just immediately fell in love with the culture. Again, a very rich 800-year history. And you see how just some of their cultures and traditions are passed down. And it's just an honor to be in that space, just to eat the food. You know, it was like the first time I saw fried rice that it was white. I was like, what? It's not brown. Oh. Like, it's white, and it's just fluffy, and it's just seasoned to perfection. Mm. And I was just like, give me more. You know, the orange chicken, it was like, oh, just everything. Like, I was ready to eat every day. But they worked so hard, you know. It was a building over there that looked like the White House. And I got there and it looked like hardly nothing was there. Within 2 weeks, this thing was almost built. And I was like,
oh yeah, they don't play about infrastructure over there.
Never in a day would America go that fast. You know, they trying to sit on the side of the road and collect the checks for years if they can. So I just really love the work ethic. I saw a McDonald's built from the ground up in 4 days. And so,
yeah, we got a freeway in Miami. We're working on that freeway for 15 years. I'm like, ridiculous.
Because they got some money and they're like, we're just going to stretch this, but
just going to sit on it.
Yeah. And so I just really, really respected the culture, you know, just how big they were on education, and the fact that, you know, they really value family. And again, these people were funny. Again, this is coming back from a time where, you know, there's so many stereotypes, and America has done a great job of like presenting stereotypes. But anybody who was Asian, black people will always be like, that Chinese person. So even just seeing like the intricacies of them, the difference in them versus what we've been taught, it was just an honor to be there and to be amongst these people for a month. And so when I came back, I immediately from the airport, got a migraine. Like as soon as I landed, and it was just like a really bad one. I'm like, what's going on here? And I would go on to the next two trips I did after that. When I came back, I would get a migraine. So I was like, what is happening? Like, is America not cool? Like, why am I this stressed out coming back here? And I know I was probably under a lot because I'm just a survivor of trauma, but it was from that point, from 19 years old, I said, I don't want to live in America. Like sums up with this place, and I don't want to be here. And so, having that experience made me, number one, knew what I wanted to do when I wanted to help people. It started off helping kids get into college and to get into study abroad programs. It switched over to what I'm doing now, and was very sure that I didn't want to live in America full time as I got older.
Wow. I think, like, traveling overseas, it just changes your perspective so much. And for anybody that's listening, especially if you're in college and listening, there are a lot of opportunities out there that not many of us know about. I had the opportunity to go overseas through basketball, and that was like my goal. Once somebody told me I could get a college scholarship, and once somebody told me I could travel, I was like, great, bet. That's what I want to do. Yeah. I want to travel. I want to get out of here. I want to meet new people and see new things. But yeah, I implore you, even if you're not in college and you're working, like, talk to your company, see if there's an opportunity overseas. See if there's, you know, if you have PTO, like, take your PTO and take a little flight.
Yep.
There's just so much to be learned from anywhere that you travel to. LaToya, I know that you have gone back to the continent many a times, and you host events there. So can you tell me how, like, your first touchdown in Africa, like, what country was it? What city was it? What was, like, that initial feeling when you got there?
Okay. So 2019, I think in 2017, I said, I'm going to Africa. Like, I was just tired of being a struggling artist in L.A. I was like, I need to get on the front end of my life, so I'm going to go to Africa. Two years from me saying that, I purchased a ticket to go to Kenya. My girlfriend had just moved over there. She met a man. She was like, you need to come on over to Africa. Like, and I was like, okay. So I booked the ticket. And then also around that same time, I met a man who was Kenyan, who worked between Los Angeles and Nairobi, Kenya. And so at the time I was going, he was over there. So he also said, you want to go to Botswana and South Africa. And I was like, okay, I didn't know what Botswana was, but I was like, I know he's paying for it, so it's fine. I'm going.
Right, book the flight.
Exactly. Exactly. So I knew I was going to see my girlfriend in Kenya. I had another girlfriend who met a man in Dubai, but he was Ugandan and she was getting married that April. So I was like, I got places to go and people to see. And so actually when I left that year, I started with Dubai and did about 5 to 7 days there, which that's a whole nother story and journey. I'm not excited to get back over there at all. But then I touched down in Kenya and remember, I was with this man. And so upon first getting there, I noticed that this man who I thought was an honest man was a liar. And so I had to deal with those challenges straight off the plane of like, like, why are we going to an Airbnb when you told me you have a house? And, you know,
That's kind of scary, though.
But you know what they say about these African men? You got to go over to where they live to see what it's really about. And they're very true about that. So he wasn't, I don't think he was as honest about the family that he was just saying he was taking care of. I very much think that there was still a relationship going on. So putting two and two together. Yeah. So I'm like, what's up? But among.
He's got a trip.
Look, come on. Come on. No regrets. And so I remember I was going to a restaurant that night. It was very hot around that time and the food was good. You know, like it felt like a Brazilian kind of restaurant. You know, we had like steak and like, I remember we had burgers and it was a good time, you know, like from the start. Immediately, we called an Uber, and the difference in America versus over there, it's like when you call an Uber, he'll just sit out there and wait for you. So I'm like, we got to go get in the Uber. He's like, we're fine. He's out there.
Oh, they're not like giving you one star for being late?
No, they don't care about that. They're just going to turn off the car and chill. And so I was like, okay.
That's nice.
Yeah, it is. And then, you know, I noticed that Native Africans, they party all night. So we often went out a lot and did not get home till sometime in the morning.
Oh, that's fun.
Now I'm used to it. But before I was just like, whoa, I need to take like vitamins and like get a nap in and do all these things. And like, why are you guys just up like this?
Still going.
Going. But the reality is they didn't probably leave till about midnight or 1 o'clock. So you had to adjust, you know, how we hung out and stuff. So, but I did Kenya for a couple of days before I went right into South Africa. And so again, South Africa is just completely different. It's like, feels like Europe when you're there. So, yeah, it doesn't really feel like Africa. It feels
that's the Dutch influence there, right?
I don't know. Okay. I don't
know. I know that like some people speak Afrikaans and there's like a apartheid, of course, was there up until.
It's like five languages there, though. So it's like it's just like a lot going on there. So but it just doesn't feel like Africa, the same Africa that was Kenya. It's certain differences, like you have to turn on the button to get your hot water going before you get in the shower in Kenya.
Oh, OK.
In South Africa, they don't do stuff like that. Yeah, or like you won't have a washer or dryer in Kenya. These people got a washer and dryer in South Africa. So, yeah, like a very
different way of living.
Absolutely. And so went there and hung out in Sandton, which is like the suburbs of Johannesburg, which is really nice. And then went over to Botswana a few days after that, which is like a 5-hour drive. And we took that drive over there. And Botswana is where I kind of fell in love. So there was just a different energy about those people. It was just very nice. It was incredibly safe. Like people were jogging at like 9 o'clock at night. After the second night, I was like, is this place safe? Like, what are they doing? They call it braai, but we call it barbecue in America. They call it braai. And so that food is just so good. I mean,
amazing.
And it's a very small place. Like the people were just really nice and helpful. And so, I would often, everywhere I went, go into the beauty store, see what the beauty department looked like, what's the makeup looking like. And so I would often be upset because a lot of the shades weren't our color. They would still have like the white people shades and not enough of our color shades. And
that's interesting because there's been a shift, I feel like, in the beauty industry over the past, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years.
Well, I went there in 2019. Yeah, I went there in 2019, so on the front end of that. But also, just this desire to be white, this whiteness thing just exists all over the world. So,
isn't that so sad, though? Like, on the continent where I feel like people are just stunning. Like, it's just, colonization is just, like, brainwashed us.
All of us. All of us all over the world. And so immediately I was just like, like I need to come here and do something about this. And so I just really felt like, you know, it's been so hard to navigate my career in America. And I just saw myself as being able to be useful, utilized in these other countries. And so when I left, it was the only country still to this day that when I left, I cried. I know China's still my favorite. But Botswana just has a special place to me. And so I cried. And I remember the guy I was with, he was like, what's your deal? Like, why are you crying? He was like, you didn't cry these other places. He was like, you even tried to learn the language. You even said hello in their language. It's like you cared. I was like,
aww. Yeah. I do care.
Yeah, I do. Let me go somewhere else, though. Hello. How are you? Speak our language. Speak English.
Botswana just changed your, like, touched your soul.
Yeah, I knew the minute I left, I said, I'll be back.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when did you go back? I know you had an event there, and I know, like, tell me about that. How did that come to fruition? Like, how did that start?
So me and this man get into it in Kenya, and so to the point where we stay in separate hotels. Towards the last couple of days of our trip. Yep. Like, literally.
Not even separate rooms in the hotel. Just went to another hotel.
Get out of here. Okay. Get out of here. And so we met up right around the airport, and it just was tumultuous. And when I got back to America, I was a different person than when I left. I was just so hopeless and such low self-esteem. You know, he really tried to break my spirit with emotional and verbal abuse. He would often say things on the trip like, you're nagging me, you're complaining. You know, he would do things like, if he had to go to a business meeting and I would try to, like, schedule dinner for us, he would say, stop asking me when I'm coming back. Like, none of your business. Oh, yeah. And I was at that point in my life, you know, I just, like, nonviolent, solution oriented. But you can't do that with someone who doesn't want to do it back. So it's just going to still be a problem. And so that's what I was fighting with. And so when I got off the plane, I was just in such low self-esteem. I was just crying, hopeless. And I told myself, I said, I'm not leaving my house until I feel better about myself. And so every feeling that I was feeling, I decided to YouTube and search it. So if it was, I'm insecure, I'm lonely, I don't think I'm going to have a man, people don't like me, whatever it was, I would just search it in the YouTube, because I was really at this point wanting to move through what I was feeling. And that got me on a journey of Wayne Dyer, Paul Coelho, Brene Brown, Oprah Winfrey, Iyanla Van Zandt. And so that began to help me out. And then I read this article that asked me a couple questions, and it said, like, what do you want to do with your life? And they had options, like, do you want to help? Do you want to teach? Do you want to serve? Like, all these things. And so I was like, I want to teach. And then I remember one of the other questions were, well, where do you want to live? You know, and at that point, I just came from Botswana. I was like, you know, I think, since I don't want to be in America anyway, I think it's like the southern part. Or, like, you know, I had already resonated with Botswana. So I think it's the southern part of Africa. And I remember just starting to smile at that point, and because I was just so broken. And so when I saw the little smile coming, I was like, let's stay with it. Keep going. Mm-hmm. And then as I finished this article, which I can't believe I lost it, because it was just a game changer to my life. I said, let me start to write down the life that I really, really want, right? This is what I call write the vision and make it plain. And I said, and then I also was willing to allow God in this process in a way in which I haven't done before. And I think a lot of times, you know, no matter what you, how you make meaning of the world, it's important to ground yourself and know that you really aren't in control. So let's stop trying to assume all that control. So I said, and I felt so strongly that God had set this call for my life of, you know, you're going to help women. And you're going to help people unlearn stuff. That's all kind of like what I heard him say back in 2017. So you're just going to help people unlearn stuff. You're going to be able to do that all around the world, have a flexible life. And if this was truly your purpose, you're going to leave America in December of 2021 and start building your business in Habaroni, Botswana, in January of 2022. And so I was like, I'm cool with that. Like, I'm super cool with that.
Message received, right?
Yeah, and what's so interesting is that I did that in 2019, and one of my clients was the co-founder of Black Lives Matter, and love her.
Wow.
Yeah, and so as we know, she went through a lot these last couple years just with the media and everything, and and it's just so interesting. It's just so funny because when I had made this plan to come back to that I was going to go to Africa, I remember doing her makeup and she was like, you don't even want to be here no more. You just, she was like, if I didn't have to be here doing what I'm doing, like, I would want to be in another country too. And so right then and there in 2019, we set a plan and I said, well, I got this plan. I'm going to leave around this time. So can I just be your makeup artist until like I leave? And she was like, yeah, well, I want to go back into art. So she was like, that's fine. Like, deal. So it's just so interesting how like people made all these stories up about her. And I'm like, we talked about this in 2019. People don't even know, you know, but it's fine. That's why I laugh at all of that media stuff. And so we set on a mission after that. And I worked with her up until 2021, like maybe first, second quarter of 2021, because that's when she kind of got out the game as well. And I was just making my way to go. And by the time we got there, a lot has changed. I changed. I read a lot of books, did the personal work, got the therapist, removed some relationships, went no contact with my mom, figured out how to make money really, really fast in entertainment, made the most money ever, saved up. And by December 19th, so I wrote this plan December 19th. So I wrote the first initial plan in May of 2019. Mm-hmm. Then I got super clear in December of 2019. I was December 19th, 2019. I left December 20th, 2021. And wow. I ended up going to Italy first. Then I went to Ghana to party. And then I ended up in Habaroni, Botswana, January 19th, 2022.
Wow. The vision came to fruition.
It sure
That's
did.
Awesome. Yes. I want to go back though, because I heard a lot of things and a lot of ways that you changed your life, as far as like doing a lot of research and self-help and healing and being very intentional about that. And I know you mentioned that you cut off contact with your mom. Why did you feel like that was part, like a necessary part of your healing journey? And what, like, does that relationship look differently now? How did that affect you, like, before you made that decision and then after you made the decision?
So once I wrote the plan in May of 2019, I was also struggling with fibroids. See, all of this really was prompted in 2018 when I passed out at a club. And so needing to sort of regain control of my life, I could no longer hide it in high achievement. I could no longer act like that girl on the outside and then inside still deal with my chronic pain and just chronic extreme stress. So I passed out at a club in 2018 that will lead me on a journey to fibroids. And then in July of 2019 is when I got my fibroid surgery, myomectomy, so essentially a C-section cut. And when my mom came, it was like the first time that as this superwoman could not like just still do all the things. I was down. And I do not like the way my mother treated me at all. Not one day. And
was that in that moment you didn't like that? Or like going back over the course of your life, you realize this is not, I'm not feeling this.
I think overarchingly I wasn't feeling it, but I was sort of confused as to how, like, what does it look like to be treated better? When you're now confronted with you literally can't be. Because I think if I wasn't handicapped, I would just go into my normal comfort zone of what I would do to just alleviate what was happening to me. But I could no longer do that.
You had to sit still.
Yeah. And so it was just overt, her treatment. It was like self-centered. You know, I'm the one sitting up here handicapped, but I still got to watch how I talk to you. I still have to, like, even though I'm not disrespectful, but I'm a person who's in pain. I'm a person who's a little frustrated. I'm, you know. I just never have had the space to actually be a human. And I knew that my voice was a weapon to my mom, because when I would challenge her or talk out of term, I would be hit in my mouth. And so once you get older and they can no longer hit you, then they like threaten you with, I'm going to go back to Chicago. And it's like, well, lady, if you want to go back to Chicago while I'm here just trying to get through the day myself, then you go right ahead, you know? And so that's what I was up against. my therapist, I had just had a new therapist at that time, and she said this later on, the level of anxiety that I had just trying to manage my mother when I should have been preparing for a surgery, you know, it's not okay. And this is just the life that I dealt with, which is why I resonate with being more anxiously attached. And so when she left out the door after 2 weeks, I said, I'll never have her help me again. And so, realizing
that. Can I go back a little bit, Latoya? I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
I want to go back a little bit to, because obviously you've had this kind of, I don't want to say tumultuous, but you've had this kind of like relationship with your mom that is not ideal. It's not what you wanted. But I want to go back to the night that you passed out in the club.
Yeah.
And can you talk me through that? And then at what point were you like, okay, I'm going to need surgery. I'm going to need help. And I'm going to ask my mom, and I guess, like, I mean, that had to be kind of like I guess I have to ask her, because who else am I going to ask? But also, like, okay, I have to mentally prepare myself to manage her feelings. So how did that look from, like, the night you passed out in the club up until the point where she's like, okay, I'm going to book the flight?
So that was September of 2018 when I passed out at the club and then went into the worst pain of my life, which would put me on a journey of fibroids. So we're talking about from September 2018 to July 2019 when I got the surgery. Remember, I did a whole trip to Africa. At this point, I was at the doctor's office like weekly trying to figure out what's going on, try all type of natural ways. My life had changed. I developed a social anxiety. I was in pain almost 24 hours a day. I was glued to a heating pad. And so, like, physically, I was just changing. I needed to slow down. And I just noticed, I remember Christmas that year, we went to Minnesota, and the room has to be centered on her. She's kind of like the matriarch of the family. So, and she has been like one of the ones who succeeded the most. So it's been easy to sort of center that, but it has led to a lot of neglect and rejection from myself. But also at the same time, you know, my mom is probably the best person I know who's going to take care of me at this point. What I believed about myself in this relationship with my mom, that even though she was not emotionally there, or that I knew we weren't going to necessarily have the best relationship, I knew I was still going to get taken care of. And so that's why I had chose her. But again, like, I didn't have the best healthy relationships and friendships, so that I was just doing the best that I can with what I had. But after that experience, I said no more. Like, I deserve to have it's okay for me to be centered during this time right now.
After your surgery, at what point did you say, okay, I'm going to stop communication?
So it was actually a year later. So in COVID, and I remember, cause we were all doing the, Zoom, everything, like Zoom birthday parties, Zoom anniversary, everything. So I'm still in pain. I'm not in pain for 30 days now. I'm in pain maybe like 15 days. So that's still a lot. Like, that's still a lot when you're like heating pad and you're clenched over. And the thing about it is, I hid all of that from everybody, you know, because I've been alone most of my life. So it's not like people are in the house with me to see what's happening. And I've usually just masked it. And so my mother, I noticed that she'd be the type of person that if we didn't agree on something or if I challenged her, she would hang up the phone on me. And I just remember I didn't like it. I didn't like it. So one time, I was just like, Mom, stop hanging up the phone on me. So she did. And my mom's the type of person, let's not talk for a month and then I'll call you again like it never happened.
Oh,
she's one of those. At this time, I had therapy. So I'm getting some understanding about what's happening, or like the treatment that I was to just accept my whole life, and started to learn about boundaries. Because a few months earlier, I asked my sister, could you please stop talking about Mom, you know, because it's not like the best thing for me. She'll say something like, I talk to Mom, you talk to Mom, I talk to Mom, you talk to Mom. Keep in mind, this woman's over 50 years old. And so I asked her, could she stop? And I via text message, and that's the last time I heard from my sister in 3 years. So I was currently,
really?
Yeah. So the first time, like literally the first time holding a boundary, wow. I've not talked to my sister. So I'm like, damn, you guys were really, was just going to let me be up here all my life acting a fool, trying to please y'all. And the minute I stand up for myself, right, not give them rules, but give them a boundary this time, I haven't talked to my sister since. And so that's a whole,
gosh, I'm so sorry. That is,
yeah.
That's a lot to deal with and a lot to manage, because I think one of the hardest parts about setting boundaries, and maybe this is just me, one of the hardest parts about setting boundaries is like the potential repercussions, the potential mm-hmm. lost connections. Because it's like, okay, I want to set the boundary, and like, you know, in therapy they're like, okay, we're going to talk about this, and this is the boundary we're going to set, and this is what you need in your life. And we're going to role play it. And then you do it in the session. And it's like, okay, that was a little friction, a little tension. And then you do it in real life. And in an ideal world, somebody would go, you're right, Ashley. I'm going to respect that. Well, the reason you set the boundary.
Yeah.
Is because there was already some tension there.
Yeah.
And setting the boundary sometimes can just like, take a left turn, and somebody who is not at the same place in their healing can take it as an offense, or just be like, whatever, I'm not going to talk to you, because
yeah,
and that hurts. That's not easy to deal with.
Yeah. It's a lot of things. I'm glad over a year ago, almost 2 years ago, I wrote a letter to my sister, my mom, and one of my friends. Never sent it to them, but it gave me a lot of healing to just kind of release what I always wanted to say. But my mom, so after that month of her not talking to me and then calling me again, I'm getting ready to get on this Zoom call to celebrate someone's anniversary. And I end up getting to that call 2 hours late because that's how much pain I was in. Imagine it takes me this long to get ready to go sit in front of a computer. That's how much pain I was in. And so I remember talking to my mom at the same time. I was in pain and us going back and forth. And I was clenched over while we were talking. And I just was like, I'm going through too much right now to deal with all this. Like, and I just was like, Mom, if you do this or that, I'm not going to talk to you again. Like, I'm not. And I'll say, if you hang up on me, I'm not going to talk to you. And she hung up on me. And I didn't talk to her for 2 years.
Wow. So what broke the ice? Like, did she, well, before I ask that, did she try to reach out during that time? Did anybody else try to reach out for her?
No, I think maybe she, I don't remember because it's now 3 years, but in the beginning, I think she did try to reach out. I just didn't answer. And then I think she got the point of like, I'm just not going to engage with you. How we got back was last year, actually, that I was coming back from Ghana and my apartment wasn't ready in LA yet. So I had about 2 weeks to just sit around. And so I went to Chicago to just kind of sit around at my sister's house. And there was a wedding that was happening. And so I wanted to go. And so because it had been 2 years and I was in a different space, I was actually really happy and feeling good. I said, I'm going to go by my mom's house just to let her know, hey, I'm here. We're all good. And, you know, like, I still feel the way I feel, but I'm not mad at you. And don't regret anything that I had to do. Went over there. Within minutes, she's talking about something else. And so I realized my mother has never
seen you after not seeing you for 2 years. Yeah. Talking to you for 2 years.
Yeah. But when you really think about it, my mother has never really established a relationship with me. She's never tried to get to know who I am. She's never like, so it was just the same old thing. Honestly, it's just the same old thing.
So you came in kind of like, okay, now I'm going to kind of mend this and I'm at a different place and like let's get to a point where at least we can be on speaking terms and like do it in a healthy way. And she was just like, next subject.
Yeah, it was just really sat shallow and surface level, you know. Well, I prayed and I just wanted you to be okay. And then it's like, yeah, you know, your nieces or nephews are doing that or this is happening and blah blah blah. And it's like not really attuned to me, and she never really has. And that's why she was so bored when she came to take care of me, because she did not know how to just be with her daughter and just like hang out with me. We've never done that. I had to watch this lady be bored for 2 weeks as if she didn't want to be here.
Wow.
So it was the same old thing, but my expectations are different now. I'm not looking for her to be happy. Like, it's all good. I didn't spend that much time at the house. And afterwards, I went to the park with one of my guy friends and we hung out there. And I was like, I'm fine. I'm fine. And so that gave her permission to kind of start back calling me and checking up on me. For which I would say she would do maybe once or twice a month. I still wasn't calling because I was just, I'm good. Like, it wasn't about that, you know? So once or twice, listen to her. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's all good. But then currently right now I said she's on a timeout or I'm no contact with her currently, because again, it's one thing to just like, I can sit there and listen to you, but it's like, don't bring mess into my life. And then when I hold a boundary and say, please don't do that or speak up for myself, it's like you have a problem with it. And again, you know, she wants to be centered, or it can never be about me or how I'm feeling. She doesn't know how to go to that space. So I just have a lot of compassion for her, but I also love myself so much that I'm not going to deal with that type of stuff in my life. Yeah, absolutely. So,
yeah. I mean, I know you guys aren't talking in this particular moment, but when you were talking, were you happy with that level of, because I know you mentioned having, readjusting your expectations. Are you happy with that level of communication and connection? Is that like, is that a point where you're like, okay, that's, I can live with that.
I'm content.
Yeah, content. That's the word. Okay.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it's hard for people to even think about like, okay, this relationship, because I think growing up, we have, like, society tells us how all of our relationships are supposed to look like with ourselves, mm-hmm. with our parents, with our significant other, whoever. But I think it's a healed point that you get to, and you're like, okay, this relationship is not what I want it to be in an ideal world. It's not necessarily what society told me it should be, but it's at a place where I can feel content with it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm into reciprocal relationships now, so I know that's not what she's about, and she has her community that feeds her and gives her what she needs. So why can't I have the same thing and go reach for those same stars as well? It's just that we may not be able to do that together, and I'm content with that.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. LaToya, can you tell me a bit more about the events that you're hosting in Botswana?
Yes. So, I got off the plane January 19, 2022, and I said, hey, I'm going to start a workshop. I only knew two people, so I made two connections when I went in 2019, kept those connections for 2.5 years. One of those people was a salon owner who also is a hairstylist in the entertainment industry. He has a movie coming out very soon, which is really exciting. Yeah, to meet someone like that and like to be so close and like we're doing the same kind of work. It was awesome. And then I met this guy who worked at the bar. So when the guy I was dating was acting like an idiot, I would go up to the rooftop and he would make me an amazing margarita. And he was just a sweetheart, really nice man and super harmless, and we just kept in touch with each other on WhatsApp. And so these would be the two people that will welcome me when I come in on January 19th, 2022. Aww. Also in the industry, there's a hairstylist, a really prominent hairstylist here from Chicago. She found out I was going there. The hairstylist and her associate also had a best friend who lived in Habaroni, Botswana, actually went to college there. So, yeah, so hooked me up with her and helped me find an apartment. Yes, like it was, and she's from Chicago. Yeah, she's from Chicago. So it was like just a good energy off the plane. My hairstylist friend was actually filming that movie that's coming out in September, so he couldn't pick me up, so he sent one of his best friends, and like for 5 days straight we like partied for 5 days. It was so awesome, and I just was like, here we go, we about to do this thing. And I didn't really have that much of a plan, except for I just thought that I could do it. And through making connections and networking, I said, I'm going to have this event. And I named it, the first year it was called Gain Confidence, Transform Your Life. And my friends were like, that title's too long. I was like, whatever, like, this is what it is now. Like,
it's a starting point.
come on. Yeah.
You just got to start.
Yeah, and so much happened in terms of like networking with people, trying to get exposure. But again, Botswana is a place I call, their Saturdays, I call it Women's Day, because on this day, all the women get together. They love to go out, do things, dress up. A lot of things are themed. So I was like, okay, look at y'all. So I was just letting people know, this is what I have going on. This is the date. And I just started from there. And a couple of people that I met, they rallied their friends together. And we got 15 people there on that day from our first event. Within 10 minutes, everybody was crying in the room. Like, everybody was crying. Because the first part of the lesson is behind every face is a story. And so this asks these questions of sort of what's happened to you, what's holding you back, who do you need to forgive, things like that. So in them having to go through that, it was bringing up a lot. And I, let me make it very clear. When I just told my story, people were crying. It was like we couldn't even. And there were two guys, my guy friend that I told you about, the old bartender, and there was another guy who would end up be like an assistant to me. They were helping on that day. And I told them, I said, when we go into the first lesson, try to move away because I want to make this a safe space for women to talk about their stuff. Because in Botswana, women really suffer from gender-based violence also. So it's really bad in the South. So I wanted the women to just like have a space to share and be open. And they shared with me afterwards. It was like, Toya, we couldn't wait till the first lesson. Like they started crying within minutes. Yeah, we cried the whole entire session. It was incredibly transformational. And it was just my first start. It was beautiful. You can see the recap of that on my Instagram page and on my YouTube page. And then I was out of there. I took my butt to Cape Town afterwards and then partied a little bit. It was called Gain Confidence, Transform Your Life. This year, it was called Better Creative, the Blueprint to Succeeding in the Entertainment Industry. This was more of a focus on the professional development side. So again, the first pillar of my company is Behind Every Face is a Story. The second pillar is Into the Dreaming Zone, that radical level of belief. And so Botswana has a lot of creatives there, but oftentimes, just like a lot of people, they want to blame government for their life challenges instead of looking at what they can do, you know, versus what they can't do. And so I saw a strong need to help move them along in their professional career, since there is a strong push towards entrepreneurs in the country. But upon doing that workshop, like the minute I started, I said, I'm not going to say I made a mistake, but I needed to take it back to what I had did the first year. Yeah.
Cause so a lesson learned.
Lesson learned, but you have to go through it. This is all about showing up for yourself. It was still great. People were still transformed, and it was still a great event. But right after that, literally the day after, I went into assessment mode. I had two people in Botswana who I could talk to and get their input. And I said, you know, what is this really about? Like, what are we really doing? What am I really doing here? You know, and it started with like, am I helping them realize their potential? Am I helping them, again, gain confidence? And so this has really turned into redefine her. So this is really helping women who want to revolutionize their relationship with themselves. And so how they've made it out of that, what they've overcome, is basically about highlighting those kind of people. It's still the same framework, because essentially they had to get their mindset right, develop a strategy and action plan, and lean into their community to get what they want. It's just that now the next event, Redefine Her, Designing Your Future, is all about now putting these women on the stage, finding out the who's who, the girls in this country, and getting them on the stage and highlighting them for their revolutionary acts and service to the country. So, yeah.
Wow. I mean, it sounds like you're doing amazing work. And I think with any type of work like that, especially when you're working with people and empowering them, it's really powerful to be able to like take a step back and be like, okay, how can I transform? How can I shift what I'm doing to better serve? So I know that the events are in Botswana, but if somebody is, let's say maybe in the States, maybe they're in the UK, maybe they're in Canada listening, can somebody like fly in and attend this event? Or is this kind of exclusively for people that are in Botswana?
No, absolutely not. The vision is for this to turn into something bigger, like Essence Fest or Revolt. You know, again, Botswana is an amazing place. And I feel like in the South, the only place that gets the love is South Africa. And so it is also my hope to bring people to this country to see how beautiful it is, to really experience it, experience the people. So if someone from this episode, like, hey, Toya, March, because I think it's like March 16th or 18th of next year, third week in March, I want to go. We're going to make sure that you can get there. You can reach out to me. We'll have all the information. I'm torn on, do I want to do something in America or do I really want to keep it Botswana focused? The other thing that I might think about is it, once I get to that level, is maybe being able to stream it so that people all over can see it, or to have some sort of mini type of work event and or workshop that will be virtual that be accessible for everyone.
Oh, I love that. Well, if the whatever, like, as the time gets closer, definitely let me know, because yes, I would love to continue sharing it with our community. And then if you end up doing something virtual or stateside based, yeah, I definitely would love to like share that information with this community. But I think what you're doing is amazing. I know we're almost done. Before we wrap up, I did just want to ask, because, and I know everybody listening, this is a little bit of a right turn for this conversation, but right now, I'm not sure if everybody knows, but there is a strike going on. I believe the like boots on the ground strike is in LA and New York. But there is a strike within the entertainment industry with the Screen Actors Guild and the Writers Guild of America. Is that right?
Yes.
Writers Guild Association. Yes. Basically, writers and actors within the entertainment industry are on strike due to the, I mean, they're just getting screwed over. If we're just going to, I'm just going to throw it out there. That's like the easiest way, the non-PC way for me to say it. Lots of things have changed, as we all know, with entertainment and with the way that we consume entertainment. And a lot of that is through streaming services.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of, they're on strike because they ain't getting paid a lot. Mm-hmm. It's insane the amount of like that the CEOs are getting paid. And, I know that there's a lot of things internally that have changed within that industry, but I know you, as somebody who is, had like a great career within makeup, within the entertainment industry, this strike doesn't just affect actors or writers. My thought was like the ripple effect to like the security guard that works outside, all the way up to like the makeup artist that works on these shows, all the way over to, you know, the production assistant that works on these shows. Can you talk a little bit about maybe what you've seen as the ripple effects mental health wise for that particular industry?
Yeah, well, certainly since COVID, we saw like how much they didn't really care about the industry in terms of not wanting to give us unemployment. If you were not in the union or part of an association, which means you were pulling a W-2, getting taxes out, for us freelancers who were independent contractors, LA was only trying to give us $177 a week.
Oh.
And that's
the that crazy rent out there.
I don't understand what they were ever thinking about that. But they were doing that. It is insulting when majority of this place is consist of people in the entertainment industry. And so the climate has just, it's just been different here in general, in terms of like a lot of people are leaving. So a lot of people have left to choose other careers or just to be in other places. I don't want to use the word somber, but I don't know another word to use. I just feel like people kind of feel a bit defeated before this even started. COVID really was like, it was all like Black Power after George Floyd was killed. And then within less than a year. Yeah, exactly. And then they took all of that away. So we've seen just that. And so now we have this strike, which you know, I get that technology is doing a lot for us, but it should not negate the hard work of people that have to use it in order for the new technology to even work. And so I'm really happy that even through these challenges that people are taking a stand to say, you know, we deserve to have more residuals, more money, like more of a piece of the pie in what it is that we create. Someone wrote some stats the other day that the average writer gets about $69,000 a year. That is nothing. Wow. In Los Angeles. And people don't know that people can't rent homes here. Yeah. Most of these people have roommates. You know, it is tough already. And they're working so hard, sacrificing a lot. And what I mean by sacrifice, most of the people in this industry are single, unmarried, and or divorced, no kids, single parents, just for the love of creating. And I am so glad that they're willing to say, I'm not going to be a people pleaser anymore. That I can go out here and still serve, but I can also have a reciprocal relationship of getting what it is that I deserve. Yeah. And so the climate is pretty somber right now because a lot of people are not working. But we are all hopeful.
I want to point out one thing for everybody that's listening, because I think sometimes if this is not something that you follow, I've been following through Jessica Lee. I don't know if you guys follow her on Instagram. Been a long time follower of her since she was doing like lock videos, but she's been doing a lot of really great work creating content to kind of keep everybody up to date on the facts. One thing I want to point out, because I think some people's gut reaction to this strike is like, they make so much money, you're rich, you live in mansions, but it's like, that is a small, tiny segment of the entertainment industry, and you have to have a certain level of success before you even get offered those types of contracts. Like, not everybody is a Tom Cruise and just pulling in crazy numbers. That there are, and I want to just bring up Insecure. That's one I love that show.
Yeah.
Amanda Seals from Insecure, she posted something the other day. She's been doing a lot of content on it too, and she posted something to the effect of like, it wasn't until she got the job to play I can't remember her character.
Tiffany
on Insecure. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until then that she had stable income from acting, and she had been acting since she's 8 years old, and she was 35 when she got that role.
Yeah.
So I just want people to have some compassion when it comes to this particular strike. I don't think they're, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think the ask is for you to stop using Netflix or stop using Hulu or whatever. But I think just being aware and having some compassion, if you know somebody in the industry, it's likely that they may be struggling a little bit right now because the work isn't there, but there's a reason. There's obviously a reason why this strike is happening. There's one other fact that I found, which is like, and I'm pulling this from memory, so I may have it a little bit off, but I think that, correct me if I'm wrong, I think for the Writers Guild and the Screen Actors Guild, in order to like qualify for just health insurance, you have to be making like $29,000 a year. And there's, I want to say, over 100,000 people registered for those, for the Actors Guild and the Writers Guild. And I think it was like 11% of people are getting health insurance. So that gives you an idea of like, majority of people may not be pulling in what, I think the red carpet effect is a thing in the United States where we, if somebody's on a red carpet, we automatically think they're like famous, they're in a mansion, yep, they're living good, but it's like people are, yep, just regular people trying to make it work. Yep. They just happen to have some cameras in front of them and maybe a blue check on Instagram.
But that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. I think, so, and I know we have to go in a second, but this lends itself to how we behave on social media or how we deal with each other. And I've been speaking to this with everyone that I've been on the podcast with and really thanking you for allowing me to have the space, because I got in touch with you through a cold call. But now it's about how many followers do you have, and what is your insights, and like, what have you done? And it's like, everybody is not gonna be Beyonce, and if you are Beyonce, that is a small, probably less than 1%. So if everybody would stop thinking that you go from the bottom to Beyonce, it does not happen like that. On average, it takes 12 years to get into the makeup union. That's why most people don't even do it. That's why most people don't even get in and do it. If you could figure out a way to not do it, why would you do it? Because then now once you get in, you have to pay these huge fees. And then now you have to fight to make sure you get the gigs. And then also when you go into the union, now you're, are you going to be a day player where you're still kind of a freelancer? Are you going to try to go out for a head makeup artist or key makeup artist? And a lot of times now with the influx of more black shows, now you're seeing more black representation. But before those shows were being greenlit, there was no black people in the trailer. So this is all still new in terms of for the black people to get their just due, but it is not easy. People are seriously living paycheck to paycheck, and they have sacrificed their entire life and livelihood for creativity.
Yeah. So yes, thank you so much for sharing that. Shout out to anybody that is in the entertainment industry. I'm sending you lots of love during this time. I really hope for the best. I hope for the best outcome. I'm behind y'all. I don't know how much more I can do, but I did want to make sure that we highlight that on this particular episode, because I think it's really important. It's kind of like an American pastime to watch movies, and like, it's a huge part of our culture here in America, in this country. And I think we have to be mindful about how those things get made, and like making sure that people are getting paid their due. And at least, you know, I mean, the fact that most people don't have health insurance is just wild to me, but I think it just highlights the overall state of America kind of putting money before people. And I'm glad that people are standing up and, you know, asking for what they deserve. So thank you again, LaToya. I want you to tell the people, where can they find you if they want to sign up to work with you on their own people pleasing? How can they get in contact with you?
Yes. So I offer life coaching, emotional support coaching, whatever you want to call it. I hold a space for you to talk about your life challenges. And I certainly have some tools and strategies to help you move past it and get towards more of a healthier, more meaningful life. You can find me at LaToya Deshaun, LaToyaDeshaun. I'm pretty much everywhere, just kind of like Google it. And then my company is www.patentleatherproject.com. Like she said, you'll click on it and see if you are a people pleaser. But if you know that you're just kind of tired of serving others before yourself, you want to start regaining control of your life, then there's a link to get to me, and we can start the process of your healing. So
yes, thank you so much, LaToya. And yes, just a side note, y'all, if you're doing therapy or you're thinking about doing therapy and maybe working with LaToya, just know she welcomes that. We had a conversation before. I know we didn't get to it today, but I love the fact that the work that she's doing, she is welcoming and in some cases requiring that you are also doing the work in therapy as well. So I love that. I love that it's a holistic view. Make sure that you guys check out the links in the description. Make sure you guys check her out. Follow her on Instagram, follow her on all the things. Make sure you're following at Black Girls Have Anxiety, Threads, TikTok, IG. Your girl is not on Twitter. I'm not doing it anymore. But thank you all so much for listening today. And if you got one thing out of this episode, it's book the flight. I mean, book the flight, sis. Take the trip. Get a little break from America.
Absolutely. Ashley, thank you so much for all that you do to continue to serve this space and to serve women. Again, like, I'm all about reciprocity and doing it publicly. I really appreciate you allowing me in and everything that you're doing to serve women all around the world.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you, LaToya. I appreciate the work that you're doing. Welcome back. Definitely let me know when you are doing your next event. So we can stay connected. But yes, I appreciate you. For everybody that's listening, thank you for listening to another episode of Black Girls Have Anxiety Too. I will catch you on the next episode. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Black Girls Have Anxiety Too. No matter where you are in the world, I really appreciate your support. See you again on the next episode, but until then, follow us on Instagram at Black Girls Have Anxiety Too and on Twitter at Anxious Black Girls. That's Anxious BLK Girls. And remember, just because you're struggling doesn't mean you have to struggle in silence. The more we talk about it, the more we heal.